Welcome to this week's episode of Bro Talk. Remember, Bro Talk is a space by memory for men and issues surrounding mental health. And we know that there's a lot of awareness about this, which is a great thing, but there's not enough. So Bro Talk is a forum whereby men can speak about various issues themselves, identity, family, work, and other areas that affect us. So I'm really pleased today to welcome to the show a very good friend of mine who I indeed met in Mallorca in 2017 or 2016, will be able to clarify for me. David Daniels, welcome to Bro Talk. How are you doing?
I'm not sure if I can. Yeah, I'm good. I'm not sure I can clarify the date. We'll go 2016, 2017.
Okay. Are you looking you're looking very fresh considering it's 6 a.m. where you are in the UK.
Yeah, I'm early bird. Thank you for that. You're looking all right, sir.
And David, I'm going to share a bit about yourself for the listeners to know more about you.
Yes, I suppose I could take a little bit of direction instead of saying what I do. I would call myself a supporter and encourager and facilitator of others. That really is what's on my heart. So right now, how that looks like is a counsellor. And I've been studying counselling for the last few years, opened up my private practice last year. But in the past, that's included things like being an author, being a public speaker. But yeah, I really have a heart for people. And as I've done this counselling journey, in particular, a heart for men, helping other men overcome whatever issues or situations they have in life that's held them back.
Thank you for the introduction, David. Let's go straight into it. So when did this heart start evolving for you or pair where you recognise that you had a heart to help others, and particularly men?
Oh, to be honest, if I look back, probably when, I didn't see it at the time, but probably when I was about age 11, so my best friend lived next door with his brother. It was me and my brother, and we used to go to their house and used to go underneath their bed. We used to call it camping. We'd have many holidays. We had this dream. And I remember we'd lie down and we'd just talk about life. And the guys would always look to me for that advice. I was the eldest one, so I think that probably played into it. Mm-hmm. But I'd always advice giving Roe. I swear I had that element of wisdom. And that's not being big-headed, I think. Just looking back, people always seem to come to me for advice. So I'd probably say that's probably the first kind of monumental moment, if I look back, that it started there, playing a so-called game. But just wanted to see the best, wanted to see my friends get old, wanted to see my friends get girlfriends. Do you know what I mean? All that stuff that we were concerned with when we were that age. And I think it just really just developed from there, really.
I'm curious, David, because you say that people went to you for advice, for wisdom, which obviously known you in a later year, that I can clearly see why. But knowing a bit more about your story where you said you suffered from being shy, I don't say suffer is the right word, but you used to be shy very young, and yet people are going to you for wisdom, for advice.
I suppose I had that quiet demeanor about me. Maybe some people said they've seen something different about me. Maybe it's my things that I give out, the spirit that I give out. And yeah, just to go back, for me, I know people have different levels of shyness. People are happy with shyness. I suffered with shyness. I saw it as I did a disability and the fact that it held me back. It crippled me. I definitely felt reserved, just like I wasn't sure of my place in this world. And I suppose because I've had to wrestle with that and come to grips with that and fortunately overcome that, I suppose. I don't know. Other people have just seen that in me, seen something in me, seen maybe see this. I've always been told I've been a good listener, perhaps. And I've always long became a counsellor. People would tell me things in confidence, maybe tell me things that they shouldn't tell me. Perhaps it was my superior, my boss, or my manager. Right. I've always taken that. I haven't taken that lightly. And I've always, where it would have been easy to maybe share some of that information in discussion with others, maybe with colleagues with gossiping, I've always respected that and trusted. Perhaps people just come to know me for that. But if you speak to David, then whatever he's going to share is going to be held in confidence.
Yeah. And we'll come to your advisory role in a bit later. If we could stay with the shyness for the moment. And as you were speaking, David, you don't automatically lie, consciously, subconsciously, men and being shy. We're not taught to be shy. You're taught to be out there. So that when you think of somebody shy, this could be that sounds slightly controversial. You're more likely to think of a female than a male. Mm. And so how did it play for you? Because yeah, we're talking about growing up in the 80s, 90s.
Yeah, just taking it a step further, we're going to look into stereotypes and stuff. I've always been quite tall. I'm quite muscular. I keep myself in good shape. So I don't, if you want to put a typical, that definitely who would not have been me.
So it'd be somebody small like me.
We're in a level wishing for it. You said it, not me. As far as when you say, it doesn't look like a man, if I really perhaps go to maybe the heart of it, was having a lack of a dominant male role model is not the right word, but father. Having that father figure in my life. I think my dad left, definitely before my youngest brother's born, so it would have been about 4. And I really, I felt the defects of that. I think one of it was being confident in myself. So I am a reflector, I am a thinker, and I suppose shyness to some degree, you take that to a higher level. So everything is internal, and you're afraid to share anything for want of being rejected. And I've experienced rejection on a number of occasions, and I suppose not having that affirmation from my dad, not having that person to look to, what is it? What does it look like to be a man who's comfortable in himself and his identity? Should that really, resulted in the shyness? My mum was fantastic, and I love her to pieces. She's done a fantastic job raising 3 of us, but she's not with that. She wasn't supposed to be my dad. So she was breadwinner, mother, trying to be a father, and some wearing so many hats that she shouldn't have had to wear. So I think the shyness really stemmed from there. Being unsure of myself now, and my father to guide me and love me and give me that validation.
So, David, what you're saying is you weren't necessarily born shy. The impact of your dad leaving when you were age 4 affected the shyness, or another way of putting it could be your confidence level. And often with men, we may say lack confidence. We wouldn't use the word shy, but they go hand in hand because shyness is going within yourself. When you say your dad left, David, can you give us a bit more context?
Yeah, so at the time, I thought I was the eldest. There was my younger sister born a year after me, and then my brother is 5 years younger than me. And like I said, I know he left. My brother never saw him. He wasn't at my brother's birth. So I know he left, like I said before, when I was about 4 at the latest. And he was born in England, but he moved back to Ghana, and very little was said about him. And then when I was in my early 20s, I found out I had 5 other siblings. I had a different mother, so I thought I was the eldest at the time. And then I was number, I think it was third in line after that, which obviously that's
a little bit. You were the spare part if you're talking about Harry.
But what is that, your boss? And I would decide where the spare part comes in terms of ranking. But I never saw him. I never saw him at all growing up. It wasn't as one of the situations when he dipped in and out of my life. I never saw him. The kind of narrative that my mum would say that he was a very gifted man. He got ill and then had to go on that. And I don't know, again, it's my shyness or my mum being a dominant figure. I never felt that I would have to question that. I thought I'm very much it is what it is. So that was the story I was told. And that was it. And he would write to me occasionally. But the overriding emotion I had towards him was one of anger. Like, why did you leave me? A lot of unanswered questions, And I didn't feel, whatever reason, life, back in my own shyness, what have you, never felt I could really address those or had the need to address those questions to my mom. So we just got on with things. And it was what it was. He wasn't around. My mum was around. And had other family members, and we just got on with it, but definitely felt a gap because of it.
Another categorization, David, that's going through my mind as you were sharing. You don't automatically think shy people would be angry people. You just feel, they're quiet, they're within themselves. But you said you had anger towards your dad because he left. Yeah. So how did you manage that? How did and how would it show itself?
That's a very good question. I'd be ready for strong emotions such as anger, as much as you would, for me, using up, but maybe was introvert, keep it in. It has to have an outlet eventually. And there was definitely one standout moment where I was in primary school and I was getting bullied by two boys in particular. I always saw shyness as a weakness, and I always felt like other people picked up on that. Bullies generally look for people who are weak, deemed weaker than them.
Yeah.
And these two boys picked up, and I remember being in the class and playing my Lego, and they used to call me this name, this name. And they called me that before, and it just got to boiling point. I couldn't keep it in any longer, and I ended up destroying the whole classroom, throwing chairs, kicking tables.
Wow.
Which was, people would say, yeah, totally out of character for this quiet boy who never said anything. And then after that, following that, I had to have counseling. And then I had to have, it'd be certain times, I'd be taken to the classroom from one-to-one sessions with the lady. It was a fantastic lady about that. That all added into shyness, which was being different. I think associated dark shyness with being different and being an outsider, and that added up into that. So yeah, the anger would boil up and then come out through, in that particular tragic classroom, at times it would be maybe verbal outbursts. And my mom had a very strong sense of injustice. My dad not being around wasn't fair. If I was passionate about certain subjects, then I would speak out. But within probably majority of the time within the confines of the house, because that was my safety. So it's never like outside. But it would just be verbal. Apart from that occasion, that's it. That's the only time that I've displayed my anger physically. And then maybe having a counselor. I don't know that. The counseling sessions maybe even more agile. Didn't feel I could display my anger. I felt like, just maybe perhaps more withdrawn, more quiet, more introverted. But anger is a powerful emotion, and there has to be an outlet at it. And just take it a step further, when I did eventually meet my dad as an adult in 2016, unexpectedly, but to be not surprising, I was in Ghana, which is where he was living at the time, but it was an unexpected, as the moment that I met him was unexpected. And I remember thinking that here's my chance to get all the anger out, to ask him, "What, Dad, why did you leave? Blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera." But this was coming off the back of him having the first of multiple strokes he had. And he barely knew my name, barely recognized me. He was incapable of answering the questions that I wanted, and different other people, but for me, that anger I had literally lived in that moment. Actually, consciously, I probably thought, there's nothing I can do with this anger anymore. The person I'm directing the anger towards can't answer the questions that I've been wanting to ask all my life. So what can I do with this anger? And literally in that moment, that anger towards him left me. But when I came to later realizes that the anger probably affected me more than it did him.
Yeah.
Sometimes we think we're angry towards someone, that anger is towards someone, but that anger is doing something within you, is affecting you, perhaps more or to a lesser degree, but it's still affecting you. So just the person you're directing that anger at. So even the love and anger, the anger left me. But that was the main source of anger I had growing up in my life, was towards him.
Thank you for being open, David, and vulnerable. And David, I want to pick up on a couple of things that you've shared. Going back to when you lost it in the classroom. Did you surprise yourself?
Yeah. I was about 5, 6. I can't remember the overriding emotion afterwards, but yeah, it definitely would have come as a shock to myself. I think that it's the only time I think I've ever displayed my anger physically. Badly, definitely, but yeah, physically. Well, I'm in my 40s now, so with this anger, I've kept some sides for that. Yeah, definitely came as a surprise to me.
Did it also frighten you?
Sorry?
Did it also frighten you? Were you frightened by how you responded and how you lashed out of all this? I didn't know I was capable of doing this.
Probably. I can't remember. It's not as strong as a memory is, actually, at the time, but I probably would have thought, gosh, what have I done? I'm probably worried about the repercussions
Yeah.
of it. then it's freaking a revisit in terms of trying to take myself back there. In my public speaking or whatever, or my book writing, it's a matter of fact, this is what happened and whatever. But yeah, I don't think I've really gone back to identify the emotions. I just, the overriding one is had the anger. It reached boiling point. I couldn't hold it in anymore. And that was a result. Not what it was around me. Fortunately, not other people, but just whatever was, and I probably, if you asked me to describe it, it probably was just a rage. As they say, the red mist probably descended on me and lost control of all logical reasoning at that time. And just, yeah, just lashed out. Whatever was around, this frustration boiling over.
What this is saying to me, David, is that everyone has a limit. And anybody to meet you today, you're one of the most placid, gentle guys that I know, and I don't mean that in any form of weakness. Mm. We'd not think you were capable of doing anything remote like that. And we do that. We make assumptions on people. I'm not. But hurt, pain, anger, rage, you named it. It has to come out.
Yeah.
And you hear the papers, you read stories and see on TV, like, what, that docile little person did that? So that's totally out of character. It's not that character for the realm of anger. Since anger doesn't look at a person's size or background or they own, I'll connect myself with you, but not in that person. It's not discriminatory. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly right.
And the second point I've been from that, there's many, but the two to my life for today is I received, if I received correctly, that from the counseling back then, that they discouraged you to release anger or.
So my memory of the counseling, I suppose sometimes we always pick out these highlight things.
Yeah.
It might not necessarily have been the whole narrative. I just remember being in a room with him and he's basically quiet. And I remember trying to get a reaction from him. So I can't remember saying, I'd probably do stuff. I don't know, maybe push something or something to try and get a reaction. I just remember him just being quiet and not really saying much. And I think I found that frustrating as well. But I don't know what happened, but maybe because I was scared of doing that again. You asked me earlier about how I felt at the time. And actually, it's the only time I've ever been displaying anger physically. So I think something happened in a moment where it was the actual event. And I think I don't want to get to that point again. And I just feel like it just made me even more shy to a degree, less willing to show my emotions. And I think, looking back, like I said, I've never been that physically angry. So something happened in that moment, because definitely still carried anger, especially towards my dad. Bullying didn't stop after then. So you can't say I didn't react to bullying again by lashing out. I don't know. Maybe, like you said, when you asked me, maybe was I scared of it? Maybe I was. Maybe that was the reaction. I think I don't want to go there again. So I'm going to do this as much as subconsciously, as much as possible, not to get to that point again. But yeah, with the counselor, I don't remember it being of use to me. It might have been, I don't know. But I just remember the counselor didn't say much at all and maybe asked me a few questions, but I felt like I'll pick it. Reflecting back and wanting answers or something. And I wanted a reaction. I wanted something, but I just didn't feel like I received that from him.
And naturally, this is many years ago, not saying you're old, but wanted a reaction, wanted an answer. Do you think subconsciously it was really your dad you wanted a reaction from, you wanted your answers from?
Yeah.
And seeing a male counsel.
Consciously.
Yeah.
All of it. Yeah. I don't think I was looking at him as a barber figure, what have you. But yeah, in terms of solving those issues that I had, those challenges, should I say, I had, then yes, definitely. My dad was the source. He was the one I needed to speak to.
David, in your capacity as a counsellor, you also run a support group, a powerful support group called Man in the Mirror. And part of that is men and discussing anger and how we manage our emotions and also express our emotions. And I'm finding increasingly today we live in a
there's very rarely the traditional family, mum and dad. We have blended families, we have single parent families, and the challenge is when the dad is not around for whatever reason, he's absent, and you see it playing out in the children, the young people, in terms of frustration, anger. And they may not be able to connect the dots automatically because they may still be seeing their dad at the weekend or some notion. But going back to your early point, dad has left the home. So when you'll now speak with men, if we've been had this similar experience with you, or they've been dads themselves who have left the home, how does that show itself? How does it affect them?
It's a good question. That's okay. Take a moment. I can't. Unfortunately, maybe I'll ask a different way. It's not unusual. Yeah, let's put it that way. It's not unusual for a person to say he'd grown up without their dad. We don't gasp. We don't. And I think that said something in itself. And I won't use the word normal, but it's not unusual now.
It's common.
It's like the blended families, it's finally the dynamics. I won't say there's anything obvious that I see because since I've grown up, it's not unusual anymore. Sometimes I've seen a difference. Sometimes I see the difference with people in my life who've had their dads around, but a bit in and out. I think that's been a different journey for some people. And I've always said to myself, rightly or wrongly, I've always wondered what would my experience have been like if my dad had been in and out of my life. And I would sometimes say to myself, maybe it was better that my dad wasn't around at all. But I think that's doing a disservice to myself because I should have my dad around. But I do think that's a different journey. And I have seen that play out in terms of, again, people questioning their identity, perhaps seeking validation from others, perhaps people pleasing, perhaps that victim mentality, which I've definitely experienced. And being a victim, not having my dad around, can mean I play out being a victim in other areas of my life or in other relationships with my life as well. So yeah, I'd say probably those are the main things I've seen, but it's different for me because like I say, we're now in a time in the world increasingly now with blended families. That's been, I'm still not around. It's not headline news anymore to put it that way. It's just part of the everyday life for many of us.
And do you feel, David, both from your personal experience and also with the work you do with other men, that we appreciate the significant loss and it affects our lives, whether you're male or female, son or daughter, by not having a dad around or dad being absent, the impact on us. And you said a key word, they said many key words, but I want to highlight is the word validation. So that implies that we get our validation, initial validation from our dad, that stamp of approval. So when that dad's not around and we don't feel we've got that stamp of approval and feel rejected, as you mentioned earlier, then we seek it elsewhere, but it's still not the stamp for approval that we need.
Right. Yeah, just the first part of your question is interesting. I'm fallback when you're almost grieving a loss. I don't think it is acknowledged that it is a significant loss. Because like I say, we're now in a world where it's not unusual. And we even got to the point where some people think they can just, they can have a child and intentionally without having a father and if that'll be fine. And I don't agree with that, but some people do have that opinion now. But yeah, I've never grieved the loss of my father until he died. My dad has died, but I never thought about that like that. But what does that look like? Has it been acknowledged that my dad hasn't been around? Has it not been acknowledged that that loss has been like? I would say that, yeah, definitely. I don't think people do acknowledge what that loss means like. I said that financially, that people would acknowledge that and recognize that in terms of fathers to pay towards the upkeep. But yeah, on the emotional, spiritual, relational level, I don't think, I'm talking sweepingly here.
Yeah.
I don't think it is acknowledged. We've got to a point now where raising children that they don't need their dad. They can manage fine. I think that's causing a lot of the issues that we see in today's world, not just the stuff we see up front, but stripping the layers.
Yeah.
Father not being around, father being confident in his identity, his worth, passing it on to his children. I think that shows up in a lot of the issues and challenges that we have in today's world, globally.
And that is a very harmful message, David. Children don't need their dads.
Mm.
And I'm not saying it's out there being shouted from the rooftops, but that's the impression we definitely get, and that's been made. And well, we know it's not true in reality because when you're working with mothers or particularly boys, and you know, range from age 11, 12, 13 into secondary school, puberty, and that is proven statistically, that is when a boy most needs a dad. You know, he's going from that transformation from child to man, but it's obvious. You know, dad, show me. And I remember you talking about, was it on Facebook, a site was saying, was it titled Dad, How Do I?
Yes. This was in the height of 2020 when the world of the pandemic. And then we had the situation with George Floyd, the whole Black Lives Matter movement. I was just reflecting on that and I just came across on Facebook, on YouTube, where a guy did a YouTube channel, still running today. I think he's written books and what have you, podcasts, saying, Dad, how do I? And the first one was, Dad, how do I do a tie? And I remember struggling with doing my tie. And then, yeah, that was an emotional time for me because all those things that were happening brought up my relationship with my father. And yeah, got quite emotional watching that. And yeah, the fact that we got to a point where there are YouTube channels with this, and I just can imagine that me growing up with that YouTube channel, I probably would have just devoured it, probably would have had it unsubscribed,
yeah,
watching it too. And imagine there'll be perhaps boys in my situation perhaps are watching that YouTube channel. Just I think it's just a sign of the times that we're living in now, that we have to have a YouTube channel showing boys or some men how to do things that a father should be doing.
So, Dave, with your experience, what's the way forward? Would be helpful? The ideal would be that families get told we get with our partners and we don't break up until death. But that's not reality. It is for some, but not for the many. So, with that, focusing on dads for today, the absentees of dad, and I'm not saying it's dad's fault that he's absent, then we just talk about these circumstances, and boys growing up without a dad. How do they navigate? How best can they be supported when their dad is not around? Is a short way of answering the question.
That's a good question. I think because if you're a parent as a child and growing up with a dad, it's basically saying try and have some good male role models in their life. It could be another family member. I remember my uncle was the closest I would have to a male role model that I would look up to, and he would encourage me. He'll take me to football, trying to encourage me in football because I love playing football, but in my shyness held me back from that. And he was always the cool uncle. But closer to him was my granddad, but we clashed and in terms of the ideals I had and the ideals he had. So I was first step, try and get some positive male role models in that boy's life. And then I'll just say, just let the boy know that he's valued. Let the boy know that it's not his fault.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's not his fault that his dad is not around. And perhaps speak about as much as you can or whatever the circumstances. And I think, I'll go with those to definitely let them know it's not your fault. You are of value. You are of worth. And your dad has his own journey, your dad has his own story. Perhaps one day you may get to know that, but it is not your fault.
And it's so important that children know that if a parent leaves for whatever reason, it's not their fault. But so many of them do carry that in their mind that they've left me, it must be my fault. And as you mentioned earlier, they may become people pleasers, but they're opening themselves up to be abused because they're taking that responsibility, that blame, illegitimately.
There's nothing wrong with you either. I think that's something I used to wrestle with. there's not, what's wrong with me? Why is my dad? All these questions around rejection. It's not, yeah. Just working on that identity and self-esteem.
And finally, David, and appropriate one to lead on to what you're recently going to be embarking on as a counsellor. Are you happy to share in regards to thinking about fathers?
Yeah.
And we don't see this other side, which you're
My counselling journey, Bruce, since towards the end of last year, I was decided to focus on helping people with low self-esteem, because some of the things I've talked about today, I never wrapped it up as low self-esteem. But when I look back on a lot of the challenges at the end of my life, it was definitely a point to it as low self-esteem. So that was the journey that I was on. And recently, within a few weeks ago, that's changed. I'm currently studying a bereavement, doing some bereavement training with a bereavement charity. And what has come to light through my own reflection is a desire I want to help men who have experienced pregnancy loss in some shape and form, whether it's termination, abortion, stillbirth, etc. It's something I've had experience in, dealt with it, still has feelings towards it. But what has come to light is that the experiences that I went through are quite unique as a man, and that there are other men who would have gone through similar experiences. And definitely in the UK, from the research that I've done, initial worship, there is a distinct lack of support for men in that situation. And given what I've been through in my heart to help others and going through that journey, I feel that I can help other men to just to navigate what that looks like. Because for me, at the time when I experienced what I went through, it was at a very young age. I did get felt I had other things to manage, and there was a, not that I went seeking that support, but that support was made available, I perhaps would have taken it. So I feel that's what I've been called to do. It's totally come from nowhere. This is not within my thinking at all.
Yeah.
That many a conversation about where should I go, counseling wise, and I just thought generally and figure itself out. I always had a thought that it would figure itself out, and I think it has figured itself out. So it's quite specialist, I think.
Yeah.
But I definitely think there are men out there. My main objective is to let men know that they serve what I offer is serving. It's definitely going to be much bigger than me. And I don't know how that will play out, but just to let my key objective is for men to know the support is there should they wish to have it. And it could be again, while they're going through what they're going through, it could be afterwards, could even be at the outset and perhaps a different result come about. But just to let them know this service is there should they so need it. So, yep, that's what I'm going now for. So it's a pregnancy loss support for men.
Great work, David. Great work. And that is completely the other side of what we focus the attention of our talk today about the dads who were denied being a dad. And that's not put in a really want to stress. That's not blaming the woman. But there is a denial that I didn't have the opportunity. And I believe you mentioned when we spoke earlier about, was it a book called Almost a Dad or a podcast?
Yeah, it's in my research. So it was a website, a book, and the mission is called Almost Daddy. And those two words were just so powerful and resonated with me. And underneath those two words can just unpack so much. So that really spoke to me that there's men out there who've almost been a dad or almost daddy. What does that journey look like for them? And thing is, I think it's an area that needs addressing, but I think not a lot of people think it is an area. I know I've spoken to you, I've spoken to one other person, and when I've shared some of my experience and this whole thing, they've just said that they never even thought about that. But there are many men going through that experience. Sometimes do you want to be the change, you've got to be the change. So yeah, actually, through this journey I'm going on, hopefully there'll be some change for men. Actually, in the midst of it or coming out of it afterwards, because there is an aftermath as well, and help them on that journey as well.
Yeah, right. There will be a change.
I'm not sure where it's going to go, but we'll see. It's all part of the journey. But it's, again, really my desire to help others.
David, you're a good friend, but this has been a real pleasure speaking to you in a different space. And I said to you before, we started that. I've got an idea, but I'm not sure where we're going. And it didn't follow my idea, which is always more fruitful. So thank you for your openness, your honesty, and letting people hear that this is still part of masculinity, being a man. And you've made many challenges today in terms of being shy, anger, and equally importantly, the role of a dad when they are there and the absence and how it affects us. And the future work you're now building towards in terms of guys who were almost a dad, the other side of what about me through abortion or pregnancy loss, and that definitely doesn't get attention. And I'm the other person you told who I was of similar thinking. I never even thought of it. I never gave it a thought. What about me? What about them? David, that work is really going to free men who have been carrying it, and it's not something we can avoid. It's something we wish for, or many things that we didn't need a service for this. We wish we didn't need police. But we do. And we need people like you who've got a heart to be vulnerable and open as you've been today and are throughout your walk of life, and giving that confidence to other men to say, yes, we can talk about this and we can work through this, and you can be free from this in a healthy way.
Thank you. Going back to one of my responses to your earlier questions, letting men know that you are important, you matter in this situation, and your voice deserves to be heard. Because often in these situations, men feel they can't share their point of view because they're not the one carrying the child.
Yeah.
So actually, what I mentioned, if there are any men who resonate with what I'm saying in any way, shape, or form, we've been through it, or you feel we need support, please reach out. I'm new on this journey. I've got experience in this area, personal experience, the counseling skills I've acquired and continue to acquire. I'm here to help. So yeah, please reach out.
And how can people reach you, David?
Contact me by probably email, probably best. So admin@Shyman, S-H-Y-M-A-N, counseling.com. Or you can get in touch with Gary through everybody in Shyman channels, and you can go through Gary as well.
Super. Once again, David, I know it's a very much overused word when you're interviewing people. It's been a privilege and it's an honor. But because we know each other, this really has been, could I say, it's been a different space. What have you come out today? It's not something we've had previous knowledge about, and your heart to help men and be findable by doing that. So thank you.
That was a privilege, Jared, as always. Thank you.
So we really hope the listeners enjoyed the time today with David, and it was open and honest and delicate at times. If this has touched you in any way, please don't manage this alone, as David has offered his service to reach out to him, or you can reach out to the Gap Counseling through the normal formats, Facebook, Instagram, and our counseling website. But please, men, the purpose of Bro Talk is to have conversations with these that are not being spoken about, and to let other people know, us men, that we're not alone, and together we can work through this and walk through it and become better men. So thank you once again for listening to Bro Talk.